This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
You have year-end goals. Constant Contact has what it takes to help you meet them faster. Sell more, raise more, and build real relationships with your audience with Constant Contact's digital marketing tools, all made to fast-track your success. Put the go in your 2024 goals with email, social, SMS, and customized marketing campaigns built for you in just a few clicks. Ready, set, go to ConstantContact.com and start your free trial today.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in, trade-in, service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Read a great piece on Real Clear Politics yesterday from a guy by the name of Adam Elwinger, who is a professor at the University of Houston. He's going to join us at the bottom of the hour. He wrote a piece about education called Make Education Great Again with some amazing recommendations about what the future of the Department of Education should exist as, if it does exist. And he'll talk about Linda McMahon as the nomination to be its next secretary. We have an audio cut of the day as well. Tomorrow on the roundtable, Jane will be off. That allows a lot of time for the other panelists. Donna Behringer, State Rep, former State Senator Jeff Smith, and Sean Flower, who's the mayor of Eureka, all here tomorrow. Mr. Paul Hall with entertainment, Scotty Warman pinch hitting for Cusimano tomorrow, and then a bunch of fun stuff, including our friend Tim Summer on music in the 5 o'clock hour. Right now, for the first time in a little while, he just won his election for Attorney General in Missouri. He's been mentioned as a U.S. Attorney General at least a little bit. Andrew Bailey back with us this afternoon. Andrew, how are you?
Hey, Mark, how are you, my friend? Appreciate you having me on, man.
I'm doing good. It's been a while since we caught up because, obviously, I know you were out there campaigning and doing stuff, but a lot of the work happened, as you know, before the primary. But you still had to feel like you just don't know, right, on Election Day?
Yeah. You know, it's a unique experience, something I had never gone through before,
right.
Obviously. But it's humbling. Look, I mean, thousands and thousands of people, some of them in places I've never been to, most of whom I've men are willing to go cast a ballot for me, and just really, it's a humbling experience, and I'm proud of the numbers we put together. I mean, look, we won a larger vote share than any other statewide official. We also, you know, we came very close to getting the most total votes of any candidate for statewide office, and so, you know, I think that's a testament to folks looking at the work I did over the past 2 years and being proud and excited about it, and that makes me humbled and proud and energized to just keep doing it.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And one of the things that I'm curious, I just spent some time, there was a New York Times article yesterday that kind of went back and forth with some Democrats on how much the trans issue really played nationally in the campaigns and in the electorate. And I think it played a significant role. And let's face it, some of the things that happened here in Missouri with Children's Hospital and Jamie Reed, you jumped on that very quickly. That's not a partisan issue. It gets played off. It was played off as a partisan issue. It's an 80-20 issue, if not a 90-10 issue. And I think you realize that, Andrew.
Oh, absolutely. And let me be clear, too. That's not why we did what we did back in February of 2023 when Jamie Reed came forward. We did it because it was the right thing to do to
exactly.
protect children.
Yes.
And the people realize it. But again, I look at Missouri and how we've led the nation and rode the crest of a national wave on an issue like that. And it is so cool to be at the forefront, the tip of the spear of the show me state where results matter and people see the results and they like what we're doing. And that's a great example. And I never once looked at polling on that issue. I never once looked at, what the mood was. I definitely had a lot of people that said, look, this is controversial. You're going to draw flack. And I said, if it means saving one child's life and protecting
Absolutely.
One child, then it is worth doing the right thing. And again, I'm proud to have taken on that fight.
I don't know if you
and
follow,
was able to lead.
I don't know if you follow Chris Elston, who's known as Billboard Chris on Twitter. Have you ever seen Chris's stuff?
I have. I'm vaguely familiar, yes.
So he travels around, you know, he literally travels around the planet, and he has tried to highlight this issue. He's always very calm. He's like the opposite of me. He doesn't let emotions take over, and people attack him, and they, you know, they try to get into it with him, and he always has a conversation, or at least tries to have a conversation about the issue. And one of the things that I asked him when I was just starting to get to know Billboard Chris, as he's known on the interwebs, I said, well, why, you know, what is your motivation here? And his motivation is, and this really stood out, and I think it's true, to stop the biggest child abuse scandal that this country has ever seen, and maybe the world has ever seen, because this thing has, you know, kind of gone overseas, and now they're trying to put a stop to it in England and other places as well. So it really is important.
Well, and it has been treated by adults who are supposed to be responsible for the health and welfare of children. It's been treated by a population of adults as some kind of fashion statement. And how bizarre, how perverse, how, you know, just disastrous for the lives of the children we're charged as adults with protecting. I think we'll look back at this, trans movement as a shameful time in our nation's history and our cultural history. And again, the one silver lining is the pride that I will have looking back and saying Missouri led on this issue and fought the good fight to protect kids. And with the passage of Senate Bill 49 and with our successful defense of that bill against constitutional challenge, we were successful and we will prevail.
A lot of this is really, really good. And then, you know, I don't know how much you've taken a look at the Title IX suit with the San Jose State, you know, trans volleyball player, but that's pretty big. Riley Gaines and her group involved in that. And I think a lot of us want to see what the courts are going to do.
Yeah, ultimately, I think that, the plain language of Title IX is clear, and I think that the Biden administration doesn't get to pervert the rule of law through an administrative rule. Congress makes laws, not the executive branch, and I think we're going to win on that issue as well. I was proud that Missouri, you know, led the way, partnering with actually Arkansas in our suit in the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals against the Biden perversion of the Title IX rules. And look, at the end of the day, again, this is like common sense. Who is for this? Who's on the other side of this?
I know.
I mean, it's not, as you pointed out, it's a marginal fraction of our society. Now, you wouldn't get that if you read the St. Louis Post-Dispatch or watch the news, because the legacy media promotes it as if it's, you know, commonplace. And in reality, it's not, because even people on the different side of the political aisle for me see it for what it is, which is child abuse.
And by the way, I have many, multiple friends who are gay that look at it exactly the same way. Exactly the same way. So your name was mentioned after President Trump won re-election as a potential attorney general appointment. Did you ever get a phone call? Are you getting calls now? Matt Gaetz is out. What can you break some news here this afternoon, Bailey? Come on, man.
Hey, Mark, you know, if I had news, you'd be the first to hear about it. Certainly, always appreciate getting to talk to you and your audience, and your shows are so well done, man. I've been listening over the past several weeks, and in every show, you kill it, man. It's just so well prepared, so well thought out. Your analysis is always spot on. Look, it's humbling to be in the conversation. Obviously, I've been the Missouri Attorney General for almost 2 years now, and I'm really just myopically focused on continuing the mission forward over the next 4 years. I want to do whatever job allows me to fight for freedom, safety, and prosperity. And right now, that's at the Missouri Attorney General's office. But look, the future's bright here in Missouri, and it's bright for the president. And, you know, I was disappointed that Representative Gaetz withdrew his name. But at the end of the day, the president's going to make a great pick there. And whoever it is will be aligned with the president's policies, which means they'll be putting Americans first, which is good for all of us.
Absolutely. So do you have different, I mean, obviously, you've been in the role. You were appointed by Governor Parson. This is the first election that you won. You're not a career politician. You're the opposite of that. But what would be the goals moving into 2025? Any different, you know, things that you're looking at?
You know, I think that what we're seeing nationally is local progressive governments who are going to, quote unquote, be the resistance against President Trump. And again, that undermines the rule of law. Look at the difference between when there's a Democrat in the White House and we have to file 50 lawsuits against the federal government to stop them from breaking the law. And then we get a Republican in office and the mayor of Denver says, well, we're not going to cooperate. We're not going to enforce those laws.
Right.
Well, you don't get to just nullify law. That's not how our democratic republic works. And so the sacred guardians of democracy in the left are actually poisoning our democratic process by poisoning the rule of law. And so there's going to be ample opportunity to fight back against that, you know, increasing criminal prosecution to keep our streets safe and support our brave men and women in law enforcement, I think, is going to continue to be a critical mission of the Missouri Attorney General's office. Fighting back against censorship. Look, our case, Missouri v. Biden, goes on. We're just now getting to merits discovery at the trial court level to root out the vast censorship enterprise. I know you and I spoke on your show the day that I was at the United States Supreme Court on that case, and that case is ongoing. We've got a lot of work to do to stop censorship from the federal government and to fight back to protect consumers on big tech social media platforms to prevent their voices from being squelched as well.
Do you have, I'm guessing you would, but obviously we're not a border state, but would you have any thoughts at this point on potential deportations? Because obviously this is going to something that's going to move forward. And again, I don't know that our state's going to be the primary focus, but there's migrants everywhere that shouldn't be here and some criminals as well. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's important that the president reinvigorate our immigration code, that it allows for detention and deportation. You've got more people who have criminally crossed our southern border than the entire population of the state of Missouri. It's making Missouri communities less safe. Look at the numbers. More than 1,100 reported incidences of human trafficking in Missouri in 1 year alone. More than 1,500 deaths from fentanyl exposure in Missouri in 1 year alone. Those are massive numbers. People are dying. People are being harmed. Missouri is now the fourth worst state in the nation for human trafficking. These are harms directly attributable to Biden's refusal to enforce the immigration code. So we've got to do something. I'm so proud that we've elected a president of the United States and Donald Trump who's going to put Americans first. And if the criminals have illegally crossed our border, he's going to send them home, and that's a good thing for everyone because it's going to make our communities more safe.
So one final topic, perhaps one of the most important ones here as we kind of bond and we have in the past on Black and Gold. Will you be at the Arkansas game and your thoughts on the way that this season is wrapping up? Look, what I said yesterday or a couple of days ago, Andrew, I think you would relate with this. I felt better as a fan about the loss to South Carolina than I did about some of the wins where we just squeaked by. Unfortunately, we're out of the CFP, but, you know, Brady's heart and soul and the way that they've been fighting is impressive. We didn't quite get where we wanted to, but you know, the team has been hanging in there and they could still win two more.
Yeah, you're right. And I'll be pulling for them all the way, hoping to make it to the Arkansas game. I've got some in-laws in town, so I don't know. You know, that might be a good excuse actually to try to get to the game.
You
but
never know. That's
look,
right.
At the end of the day, Brady Cook got injured. And I think that, the team struggled in dealing with that injury. And that's always going to be true on any football team, but certainly true at the college level where your backups maybe don't get the same number of reps because of the limitations on practices and so forth that limit their ability to prepare for that kind of situation. And the team suffered. I still think that this program is on the rise. I'm excited about the future. And I think they find two more wins. I'm excited to see where we go for a bowl game.
Awesome. I am too. Andrew, thank you. If you do end up going to the Arkansas game, I think I'm going to sneak into that one. We'll guide you into our tailgate. We got a good tailgate. You have a great Thanksgiving with the family. Congratulations on the official win, and good luck with everything. We'll talk soon.
Hey, thank you, my friend. Talk soon.
All right, take care. That's Attorney General Andrew Bailey with us this evening. I want to follow up on something he said there because I haven't talked about this with the mayor of Denver. You have the Democrat mayor of Denver, Mike Johnson is his name, challenging Trump to try to deport any illegal migrants from his city, saying that he would deploy the Denver City Police and volunteers from the local community to show force against the feds trying to deport illegals. Here's what this is baffling. What country do we live in? What country is he? And are you that tone deaf that you don't understand? Again, there's a big difficulty here with this guy in Denver and others determining the difference. It's not too hard. Most Americans get the difference between legal migrants and illegal migrants, right? Not too tough, except Mike Johnston has an issue with this. He says more than us having DPD stationed at the county line to keep them out, you would have 50,000 Denverites there. It's like the Tiananmen Square moment with the rose and the gun. You'd have every one of those Highland moms who came out for the migrants. You don't want to mess with them. So he's basically saying if you try to deport illegal, not only illegal citizens, but migrants who have committed flagrant violations of our law, that he's going to try to put up a wall of 50,000 guilty white women out in the Denver area to stop the feds from deporting them. That's going to be pretty interesting if it comes down to that. But he's not the only one. You know, Brandon Johnson's doing it. Maybe it's everybody that sounds like Johnson or Johnston.
Maybe that's it.
But, I mean, that's quite, you know, don't you think Denver has some people that are probably real criminals?
Probably.
That they could, you know, maybe look at people who are violating the law and arrest them and not worry about what the feds are going to do with deportation? because that seemingly, and they're denying that these Venezuelan gangs are even a thing.
Well, there's a few of them, Mark, but not enough to be a problem.
I guess that's what they say.
They're in a couple apartment buildings. A
couple of more things that I wanted to just touch on briefly that I have not talked about. The big story of the day, of course, Matt Gaetz out. We'll have some audio featured and audio cut of the day. I haven't played this yet. This is one of those things that Fred snuck in here. I'm trying to get something created for Doge, Sue. Wiggins is working with me because, you know, I love this here.
It's time for Insect News.
So I'm looking for...
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Something along those lines for Doge, because I think Doge is going to be big, right?
Yeah.
But here's Vivek, and I haven't heard this yet. Fred put this in there talking about Doge.
Elon and I are going to start a separate track of Dogecasts that explain exactly what we're doing to the public to provide transparency in what is a once-in-a-generation project. We want to bring the public along with us to lift the curtain, to take us behind the scenes of what actually that waste, fraud, and abuse in government looks like. However bad you think it is, it's probably worse. But we don't want to do this to just expose the problem. We want to do it to solve the problem.
I love it. I love it. So there you go. They're going to do a Dogecast. And boy, I hope they certainly go after a few things from the very beginning, including the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Let's pull their money as soon as we can. You have Planned Parenthood out there. They spent $40 million, by the way, in the last election cycle to elect Democrats. $40 million. They got a $670 million grant from the federal government last year, Planned Parenthood. They're corrupt.
Jeez.
They're partisan. So it's not about women's health. Let's not be fooled. That's just the tip of the iceberg at making some cuts. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing what they're going to do there. One local topic before we get to, I'm very much looking forward to Adam Elwinger and talking about education here in a couple of minutes. Did you see the story about the Circus Flora board member?
No.
The board president. So this is in the local paper today. Federal authorities are accusing the former board president of Circus Flora of stealing tens of thousands of dollars over the course of nearly a year. The guy's name is George Pace. He's 61. He lives in Ladue. He was charged yesterday with using Circus's credit account to charge thousands of dollars in personal expenses. He also is charged with diverting to himself checks from Circus Flora and falsely applying for federal pandemic relief loans. Yeah, you know, if these people would just work as hard on their job. He was the board president. He was elected the board president in 2022. He now faces six felony charges. Shortly after he became board president, he received a card connected with a $150,000 line of credit that Circus Flora opened up with, well, I guess it was because of COVID. So, you know, they're trying to fill the gaps there. They get a $150,000 credit line. He goes out and he goes to restaurants. He paid for horseback riding, basically treating himself to anything that he wanted to. And they caught him. At this point,
they're always going to catch you.
Well, you would think. But, you know, the thing about the white collar criminals, think about this. And I don't know how much in the end he ended up stealing. Sometimes it's a lot more than $150,000.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And I'm not so sure that people don't gauge it in a sense. What am I going to do? Spend 2 years in a federal prison and I still had a lot more money and I was better off to begin with. There was this case, Sue, when I was in Columbia, Missouri. I've spoken about this a little bit over the years. And it was this woman by the name of Christy Tutton. She worked at Jesse Hall, which is where the administration is on the University of Missouri campus. And now, mind you, this was in the late 1980s, right? Now, check that. Early 90s. Okay. Early 90s. She stole roundabout. Embezzled $700,000 from the University of Missouri.
Goodness.
And she was married to a guy that was a big radio star at the time in Columbia. Andy Tutton was the name. He was a friend of mine until I started going after his wife on the radio because she embezzled all this money. Now, it was interesting because Andy, a lot of people thought that he knew, but she told him a story that the money came from an inheritance. It was really a bad, you know, blood situation in the family. So I really don't think that he knew about it.
Sounds like
But she embezzled a lot of money. And then mind you, she got pregnant when all this was happening. And a lot of people thought that that was just an effort to keep out of federal prison. There was a federal court judge by the name of Scott Wright. I covered all this, so I remember it very well.
Interesting.
Who, you know, she did end up going to prison for a while, but she got out a lot earlier than she should have. Nobody really ever knew. Of course, there's always restitution of these things, right? She didn't pay back that much of the money. Now, I will say this, and I'm not trying to spike the ball or anything, but she died in a tragic car accident not too long after all that happened and left the planet. But that was a big case, and these things happen. But nonprofits? Really? Good job, Mr. Pine. Good Lord. Audio cut of the day coming up. Before we wrap here at 6 o'clock, we got a great roundtable set for tomorrow. Jane is taking the Friday off, and then we're off for the holiday next week. But former State Senator Jeff Smith will be here. His first visit post-election. State Rep Donna Berenger and the Mayor of Eureka, Sean Flower, all here tomorrow. Scotty Warman's going to pitch in for Cusimano. My friend Tim Summer will talk music. We got lots of fun stuff as we take you into the weekend. So I do have some hopes for this new administration that they really get things done. It seems like they're, you know, interested in that with all the, you know, the efforts on DOGE in particular. But education is something that has been important to me. And what happened to kids in this country in the aftermath of COVID is just revolting, candidly. And there was a piece that I read on Real Clear Politics yesterday by a professor at the University of Houston. And I like the way that he started the piece. And he's going to join me here in a second. But he said, imagine these words as the first speech delivered by the incoming Secretary of Education, who now we know would be Linda McMahon. Today, I'm here to deliver bitter medicine. American education has failed. Teachers and parents, administrators and government, and even students all bear some responsibility. I think there's a lot of truth to that. We're going to explore a little further with Professor Adam Ellwanger, who's with us this afternoon. Professor, how are you?
I'm doing great, Mark. Thank you.
Well, thanks for coming on here. I have an indirect Houston connection. I was just there a few weeks ago visiting my first grandson. My son lives in the Heights. Go to this restaurant called Squabble. It's outstanding. He works there. Really good restaurant. Invoice
well,
me. You can invoice me if you go there.
Grand
How's that
job.
Sound? Well, thank you very much. Look, education, this is such a big topic. I hope at some point we do a little bit better autopsy on what happened during COVID and the learning loss and some of these things that have happened to these kids. I feel sick about it. I've got a little girl who's in fourth grade, and I think she's doing pretty well right now, but not all the kids across this country are. But your message, I think, is extremely well taken, and you do need some changes in education. I don't know if we'll get them, but I want you to get into a little bit more detail about your recommendations, what your hopes are here.
Sure. I think that the pandemic, like you said, stripped a lot of this bare, but I think that it goes back probably for the majority of yours in my lifetime, the roots of the decline of American education. There's a lot that's happened, like the disintegration of the American family, that have contributed to this. And there's a cumulative effect. As the schools have gotten worse at imparting the necessary knowledge to maintain our society to the students, those students in turn have become less and less prepared to teach if they choose to pursue education as a career. So as time goes by, this problem has been compounded. And I really do think at this point, just from my position as a college professor, I could see it in the incoming students to college. They are not at the level of preparation or anywhere near where they were, say, 20 years ago. And the pandemic has definitely made it worse.
So, you know, you get into some of these big issues, even what I refer to with DOGE and trying to strip down bureaucracy and all this. It's so, so huge. I think there's an inability to even get started on how to solve some of this. So where would you start?
Well, that's a great question. And like you say, this is the sign that it's not going to be a quick fix, and it can't be a simple fix, because there's not one or two things wrong. Everything is wrong, top to bottom, K to 12, you know, college, the whole thing. A lot of people have responded to what I wrote saying, this is just another national solution. All you're doing is using the power of the federal government to suggest some radical changes, but the problem is the federal government's involvement itself. That may be true, but even in the best case scenario, if Trump decides to nix the Department of Education, that will not be something that happens overnight. And even if it did, there would be a large sort of vacuum in terms of what local school districts would do in the wake of that.
Right.
So at least for some time, we're going to need to work within the existing mechanisms to enforce a major change at all levels. And I don't think that there's one thing you begin with. I think that there's four or five things that you pursue simultaneously that would have an immediate effect on education.
So I certainly understand a desire to get rid of a big federal bureaucracy like the Department of Education. I tend to live in reality, and I don't think it's realistic to think that we're going to, as a Congress, get rid of the Department of Education. So I'm more in line with what you're thinking here, because if we kind of assume that that's not going away, let's try to make some changes anyway and focus on things that really matter. But one of the tough things about this, and you mentioned this, Professor, a couple of minutes ago, you wrote about this, the rise of single-parent households, less common among affluent families, has been catastrophic. When you only have one adult in the home, they're working 50 to 60 hours a week, you know, and I don't even work close to that, but I'll tell you, you get home at night, your daughter has homework, you want to chill, you don't give them the attention that they deserve. So that accumulates as well. So some of these problems are societal, and I don't know how you fix that.
Yeah. I mean, I this is why I think it's got to be a multi-pronged approach. In the article, I say that we need an academic Sputnik. Sputnik, of course, was the real engine of the United States entering the space race in the middle of the Cold War. And we saw what we can do when we really devote a singular focus to success. Some of the things I think that we could do in the immediate sense is end summer vacation. Summer vacation, I know this won't be popular with the kids, but summer vacation is a relic of a time gone by. And in the aftermath of the pandemic, where we have this enormous learning loss, we simply don't have 3 or 4 months a year to sacrifice to kids playing at the beach or playing video games.
By the way, along those lines, I'm just going to go home tonight. When I get home, I'm going to tell my daughter that Trump decided to end summer vacations. I'm going to get that on video and just see what her reaction is. But I understand your point. But again, a lot of these things, you know, they're just so big. You talk about other things like creating a curricula, prioritizing history, civics, and an understanding of our government. Here's one that would be a favorite with my audience. We'll eliminate curricula that divide Americans by race, class, religion, sex, or sexual identity. But on a nationwide basis, when you have an effort to, let's just say, in the real world right now, deport migrants who are criminals, and a mayor of Denver that's saying, hey, we're going to get our own local law enforcement together to fight that. It's hard for me to believe there's going to be a lot of people in the educational world on the left that are going to lay down and say, you know what, you guys are right. We're going to allow this to happen. So I bring that up because this is just going to be a battle, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And you know, you bring up the issue of illegal immigration, and this has become a huge issue in our schools, especially in urban areas.
Houston especially,
40 years ago.
Right?
Yeah, definitely in Houston.
Yeah.
40 years ago, schools could assume that the vast majority of students were competent in English. This just isn't the case anymore. You know, serious learning cannot occur when a teacher is trying to satisfy a room full of students who speak five different languages. I think the takeaway here, and we could debate the merits of having a multicultural society, but if we're going to, right, that makes a common language and a common culture all the more important.
Absolutely.
You can't have a multicultural society and say, but keep your language, keep your way of life, right?
Assimilation becomes a bad word. Why is assimilation a bad word? It shouldn't be.
It certainly shouldn't be, and especially if we still believe in the principle out of many one, you know, which is a foundational principle of the United States. A huge part of that is language. And just once again, creating incentives for newcomers to learn the language would have a radical effect in education, you know, especially in the lower levels, K through 12.
There are just so many big challenges, and I think your ideas are awesome. That's why I invited you to come on the show. I hope that we pursue at least some of these in the next couple of years, because I think a lot of us have waited for changes, and there needs to be at least a dialogue. And again, this is where I've fallen the last few weeks here, Professor, just so you know, because this show is a pretty big critic of the legacy media and what they've provided the American people. And again, this is one of those things, even with the learning loss in the aftermath of COVID, there's no real journalism that's looking at some of these things. So unfortunately, the ideas don't get shared. We don't have a national dialogue, and that makes things even worse. So I have some concerns about that. Let me share one quick story with you, because I think leadership is important as well. There's a woman that I got to know very well years ago here in St. Louis. Her name is Tiffany Anderson, and she was charged with running an area here in the St. Louis area, Jennings School District. It's in North St. Louis County, very African-American, a poor district. And she came in doing things that certainly I'd never seen before, and other educators may have not seen. She stood on the street corner every morning when these kids were coming to class, and she'd see some of these kids carrying pillows because they didn't even sleep on a bed. She'd meet the parents. She'd really get to know them. She put a washing machine and a dryer in the school, and she said, "Parents, you're welcome to use this, but here's the trade-off. You got to do a little volunteer work here, you know, at the school." And parents took advantage of that. She's in the Wichita School District right now. She was hired away, but her style of leadership, and by the way, she wasn't asked for more money because, you know, there was only so much money, but she was doing it not by sitting in meetings. She was actually trying to work with the kids and look at ideas to educate kids. And we don't have enough of that, it seems.
Yeah, that's awesome, that sort of initiative. And we really need to take it back to blueprint here, if for no other reason than the fact that the Americans who are most harmed by our failures in education are the working class and the middle class Americans. The upper class Americans can buy their way out of a failing system, right? But if we really want to fulfill the promise of class mobility, if we want to fulfill to Americans the idea that your children might be better off than you, right now it's the people who want mobility that are really suffering as a result of this education system that simply doesn't allow it. So I think we owe it to especially the new voters who voted for Trump, especially the ones who come from demographic backgrounds that are not traditionally Republicans, to show that we're serious and recognize that education has to be reformed for no other reason than the fact that it is the lower end of the income spectrum that's getting most hurt.
Right. I can break it down very simply this way. You know, and you can see this in the aftermath of the election and the polling. We spend, and the LA Times and our paper here, and I bet it, the Houston Chronicle, so much time on climate change, to which there are very few solutions. This is something that is a crisis right now in this country, and there are ways to fix it, at least improve upon it, and we don't have the amount of time and effort that's spent on that, which is unfortunate. But Professor, thank you for shining some light on this, and I really appreciate you coming on here. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too. Thanks for the invite.
All right. Take care. 542, audio cut of the day coming up. By the way, I misidentified Dr. Anderson. She's in Topeka, not in Wichita, when she left Jennings. We're coming back with audio cut of the day. Well, before the show has wrapped, we have our next attorney general nominee from Donald Trump. Matt Gaetz pulled out earlier today. Here's what he said on The Truth Social, which, of course, immediately goes up on the X, formerly Twitter. Pam Bondi. Sue actually shared this with me during the break. I had not yet looked at it, and I knew the name, but I didn't know who she was, and I don't even know if I remembered this was her. But she was the Attorney General of Florida. President Trump said, Pam Bondi, our next Attorney General of the United States, was a prosecutor for 20 years, where she was very tough on violent criminals, made the streets safe for Florida families. Then, as Florida's first female Attorney General, she worked to stop the trafficking of deadly drugs and reduce the tragedy of fentanyl overdose deaths, which have destroyed many families across the country. She did an incredible job that I asked her to serve on our opioid and drug abuse commission during my first term. We saved many lives. And he goes on to say, for too long, the partisan Department of Justice has been weaponized against me and other Republicans. Not anymore. Pam will refocus the DOJ to its intended purpose of fighting crime. So there you go. Pam Bondi. I don't know anything about her, but I'm sure the hit pieces have already started. They'll see if they can take out, you know, another nominee. Here's Eric Schmidt. I'm going to retweet this right now. Eric Schmidt's got a picture of her. She looks very young.
She was born attractive. In 1965.
Well, she's... Wait! She looks pretty good if she's my age.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me?
Mm-mm.
Okay, I'm going to throw the challenge flag on that one. She looks really good for... Are you look at this picture with Schmidt. You're telling me she's 60 years old?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Maybe she just looks really good.
She all just right. looks good. Good for her.
Yeah, that is good for her. She does not look anywhere close to 60. But that's the big breaking story here.
She's still 59, Mark. She's okay, not going to turn until... Wait. No, she would have turned because it's November 17th is her birthday. Yeah, she's 60.
No, she just turned 59 then.
Oh, sorry.
Because she'll be
60. You're right,
65.
I just turned 59.
Right.
Yeah, so she's 59.
There you go. That's pretty good, though. But anyway, that's the breaking story. Eric Schmidt said, congrats to my friend. She'll be a great attorney general. Great choice. Real Donald Trump. We'll hope that things turn out pretty well from there. I do have an audio cut of the day here in a moment that will be about Matt Gaetz. I'm just going to telegraph that. But something interesting happened here about an hour ago on the show, Sue, that I just want to share because I think these stories are helpful for the audience. And it's another one of these things where it's kind of a weird coincidence. So my wife... I get these alerts for the credit cards when they're going off, and something came through on the Southwest card. Actually, she made a mistake trying to book something for my son in Houston. But anyway, that alerted me to a charge, and I was texting. I'm like, what are you doing to me here? You know, and we figured it out. There's a refund. But right after that, I look at my email, my personal email, and I get one of these, what I'm pretty sure is a phishing expedition from J.P. Morgan. It says J.P. Morgan notice, but the email address is all weird. Remember how these things it says?
Oh, yeah.
So the email address it comes from is prayag.holl7@icloud.com. It's just a bunch of nonsense, right? So I get, but look at the email. It says, Chase, confirm you made this purchase. Chase fraud alert. Dear customer, tell us if you or someone authorized, use this Chase card on the gift card. It says $300, top UPBV, $233, SQC.
Oh, my gosh.
Now,
it is.
It says, to, you know, yes, I recognize it, or no, something's wrong. And then when you, I haven't pressed that, but when you press that, what will happen is they'll ask you to fill out information.
Uh-huh.
And what I love about these things is like, they even at the bottom of it, it says, look, Chase would never ask for your account number or password in your email. But I'm pretty sure they would ask for your social, and that's what they're looking for. So I don't think it's real
at
all.
They are getting better and better.
They really are. They're very, very sophisticated. And what was the other one that I had just like that?
It was because they wanted the rest of your address.
Oh, that's right. It was
to
USPS.
Give you the package.
Yeah. And
yes.
Again, that's why this is weird, because it's almost like they have a weird way of knowing. Because in that situation, I was... Realistically, I was, expecting
most
a package.
Most of us are, yeah. Right? Because of Amazon.
Right.
So you think, oh my gosh, something happened. I have to fill that out.
Yeah.
Don't fall for it, people.
No, I know. That's why I wanted to share it. Before I do audio cut of the day, let's kind of review what's coming up tomorrow. I also have a pair of tickets to give away. You see James out there? Because I have a pair of tickets for Guns N' Hoses.
I do.
And he's going to have to answer the phone. So hopefully he knows that. If you'd like to go to Guns N' Hoses, KFTK is going to air it live. Golden Oak Lending and a bunch of other sponsors like T.R. Hughes Homes making this possible. They're doing the Fox coverage. We're going to air it here a week from Wednesday, so a week from last night, for Guns N' Hoses as the cops take on the firefighters. If you'd like to go, I got a pair of tickets for caller number 2. On the contest line, we'll just make it real easy. 314-241-9797. You're a winner. You're going to Guns N' Hoses, courtesy of Golden Oak Lending and T.R. Hughes Homes and 97.1 FM Talk. When we gather tomorrow around the radio at 3 o'clock, we'll have no Jane Duker. She's taking this Friday off, so we'll hear from her next time in December because the whole show will be off next Friday. But State Rep Donna Behringer will pinch in for Jane. Former State Senator Jeff Smith, haven't heard from him since the election. The mayor of Eureka, we love Sean Flower. He's a veteran of the roundtable. He will be here tomorrow. Paul Hall with some entertainment. Big movies coming out, Sue.
Oh, big.
We have Wicked this weekend and Gladiator 2, of course, next week. Scotty Warman's going to be here at 4:45 for Cusimano, who's taking a little time off. And Tim Summer on some music stuff tomorrow.
You know
as well.
What they're calling it? Glicked. This is the weekend of Glicked.
They always have to come up with something, right?
They always have to do stuff like that.
You know, I'm not as excited, I don't think, about the Gladiator thing as a lot of people, because that movie was so long ago, and I don't think it's really even related to that, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I just know that Denzel Washington apparently kissed someone and they cut the kiss. That's the only thing I've heard about it. You heard that story?
I did.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't really care, but that's what they did. Let's do this.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, I just think he's funny, and he is funny from time to time. Matt Gaetz gets out. Pennsylvania Democrat John Fetterman says this.
Holy shit, I didn't see that coming.
Oh.
I mean, like, yes, he was the ultimate troll,
And people have the opportunity, they can freak out over things and respond. And if you want to do that, you don't have to. You better pace yourself, though, because it's not even Thanksgiving. And we don't have to react and take unserious things so seriously that the world's going to spin off its axis the way it is right now. But I just heard something. I heard that Trump is going to issue a new silver dollar to commemorate that. So I think that's going to be the next cycle.
I just think he's so damn funny, which is one of the reasons. That was your audio cut of the day. Have a great Thursday evening. Enjoy the football game tonight. Go Steelers.
Go Steelers.
Yeah, we'll talk to you tomorrow at 3.
Get more at 971talk.com.